Podmoth.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello!
Welcome to BSP Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where, almost said two nerds, two idiots debate weird phenomena.
One nerd, for sure.
Don't talk about yourself like that.
I'm Chris, I'm the believer.
I'm Cody, I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we're an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network. And yay, this is a full episode.
Yeah.
It's a lot to get out now.
It is. So I'm curious to know if anybody guessed this topic.
Yeah, because with your story, how is it connected?
All right. So I talked about that mummy cat last week, right? Mm-hmm. Well, in my research, I came across there were cats, sometimes beloved members of the family, who had crossed to the other side, buried in the walls of people's homes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And so let's talk about what the... Let's announce the topic, and then I will continue that line of thought.
So what we are talking about today is kind of an amalgamation of things, but there are objects of protection and or warding off evil. So
yeah, and I think it was like...
It can fall under a lot of different names, so it just depends what you want to call it.
So many, because I think we were kind of leaning towards like talismans and amulets, but some of my stuff branches out a little bit, so yeah.
Mine definitely does.
This is about prophylactics for the soul.
Oh my God, did you make that up?
Did
you,
I did.
Is that in your notes?
No, I didn't. I just made it up, and now we got a new topic. So... Back to what I said, so they would actually find, can you imagine being a researcher and finding a mummified cat buried in someone's wall? Well, it was believed that by, which way do you say it? It was believed that by embedding a cat in the walls, it would protect the home from misfortune, the evil eye, and in some case, even witches.
Oh my God. So maybe that's why the cat, the Maneki Neko? Maneki Neko is... a symbol of protection. Maybe that's why.
Could be. Yeah. Maybe you just got to stick it in your wall.
Yeah, that's weird.
That is, it's super, super strange. Yeah, so I came across that, and it was actually going to be an entire story merged with the Minnesota information.
Yeah.
But then I found something that is, to me, so much more entertaining. And if I'm going to do something, it's at least going to be fun. So yeah. I went ahead and switched.
So if you haven't, and I'm telling you too, is look up stories of shit that people find in their walls when they like move in and stuff. Like there's a story that came out this last week of this woman finding like a whole nother room.
Saw that. Like in her tiny, tiny little New York City apartment.
That shit happens all the time.
You know, so I had feelings about that. And we're tangenting a little bit, but that's okay. I wouldn't have told anyone because you get a free whole second apartment because it was like hidden. If you don't tell anyone, she could have furnished that shit and had like it would have been amazing. But I'm sure now that it's gone viral, that apartment complex is probably gonna seal it up or try to find a way to make money from it.
Yeah,
you know. So I know this is gonna be fun because I know you believe in some of this stuff.
Oh,
and so getting into history or to believer, I think will be neat.
Yeah, it was an interesting topic just because there's a lot of stuff, and it can go very many places, so it was hard to kind of rope it in and hone it down to specific things.
Oh my God, this could be 10 episodes because there's so much to it, to protection and spells and amulets. So I feel like this was one where I feel like I just scratched the surface of this. Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm an expert on this now. I could do a symposium of this topic. But for this one, it is clearly not the case. So should we do drinks?
Yes, you or me first.
Why don't you go first? Because I think I've gone first the last couple times.
Okay. So mine may seem very silly, and I know Cody's going to love it. But today I am doing a drink of kombucha.
Gross.
Kombucha is so good, but the reason is because it is a detoxifying agent, I guess, or helps in detoxing your liver and stuff, as well as like, it's just beneficial health wise. So it's also a kind of protection of yourself, you know?
That's a good one. That's a good Cody rationale. I like it. It
contains antioxidants, as well. But it's a detox. So, I mean, it also kills bacteria. So it kind of protects you in a more health-related way.
It's protecting a different kind of wall than the mummy cat.
Yeah.
Your anal wall.
Anyways, yeah, it is actually good for your gut.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it has probiotics as well.
Oh, God, it's so gross. I can pretty much smell it from here. So mine is more straightforward, because usually I try to find something that is kind of an interesting rationale.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually found a drink just called a talisman.
Oh.
And it's an actual mixed drink that I found.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it is rum, vodka, light rum, lime juice, triple sec, and pear. So
like
pear nectar. So I actually had pear nectar in my pantry because I was supposed to be giving it to my sister. And I was like, well, if I've already got it, I might as well just use it. So
random. Like, who the fuck has pear
nectar? I know. That's why I was like, well, this actually works out okay. So,
such fun.
Such fun. Perfectly splendid. All right. So should we do some history?
Yeah. So considering our topic, I thought with history, I'd cover a couple of things that have to do with protection or warding off evil. I will start with a talisman, because I just like the sound of it.
Wait, say that again?
Talisman.
Oh, okay.
Talisman.
Talisman. Talis me your bananas. Do you like the sound because it has man in it?
I've just always liked that. Like the name of the novel, that's where I first heard the word, The Talisman, by Stephen King and Peter Straub.
Yeah. I like the word light rally.
Anyways, so a talisman at its most basic is an object, whether that be religious or magical, which for some people is the same thing, that is used to protect, heal, or harm a targeted individual who it is made by or for. Talismans can be carried or worn, such as a necklace or pouch, but also can also be a permanent fixture, such as those found in certain buildings or architecture. Talismans have been known to be used not only for protection, but have been known to be used in other ways, such as for aiding infertility or curing infertility, as well as in growing crops or producing certain weather for said crops. The word talisman is based in ancient Greek and can translate to completion.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. There are a few ways to prepare talismans. According to New Age philosophy, the talisman should be prepared in regards to the planets or elements, and can also have other things such as color, scents, patterns, and so on. In order for the talisman to work and amplify its power, it should be used in harmony with the element or the planet chosen. In Islamic tradition, anything can be made to produce talismanic powers, which can be amplified by inscribing holy names as well as verses from the Quran on it, which are said to be an essential ingredient to Islamic talismans.
Cool.
One talisman specific to Islam and the Islamic are the Islamic talismanic bowls, which are bowls that are inscribed with instructions and also saying what the specific bowl should be used to cure.
Ah, interesting.
In medieval Europe, talismans and amulets were often prescribed by medical people, which is a good segue into amulets.
Nice.
Sometimes talismans and amulets will be used interchangeably, but there are some differences. Amulets are sometimes also called good luck charms and can be used to protect the person who has it and can be made of anything, actually. One major difference between a talisman and an amulet are their makeup. A talisman will be often be made.
They wear makeup?
No, not like literally.
I was like, this amulet, I'm picturing like, oh, look at the rouge.
What they're made up
of. Comprised of or whatever. Yeah.
Talisman will often be made for clothes, weapons, or to be inscribed as text. And amulets, on the other hand, are said to be made from more durable materials, such as metal or crystals or wood.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
In other parts of the internet, they said a talisman is made to give power to its wearer, or the amulet has the power to ward off bad stuff.
Ah.
Amulets are many years old, like thousands. In Palestine and Syria, at one time, amulets were created that were made of flat sheets of silver, gold, copper, and lead. These sheets were inscripted with incantations, and then they would be rolled up and put in a small container that was worn as a necklace. Jews, Christians, and Muslims also believed in amulets that would protect and heal, which obviously has carried on to modern times. That being said, in these religions, the protecting object was broken into categories. There was the carried slash worn on the body. Mm-hmm. There's the hung above the bed of an ill person, and the medicinal, which I think kind of overlap there.
You know, since you said that, mm-hmm. I'm kind of like, whoa, because I was like, oh yeah, like I don't have any of this stuff, but I wear my scapular.
Anything can be considered. Yeah.
Supposedly, if you're wearing it, if you die. You're supposed to go to heaven within 7 days. Like, you're not going to go to purgatory or hell if you're wearing your scapular. So that would absolutely be like a
talisman.
A talisman or amulet. Yeah.
Amulets and talismen. I guess that's a pair, or talismans.
Probably talismans. Yeah.
Talismans.
Talisman.
Amulets and talismans vary from culture to culture, as you would think. For example, in some East Asian countries, some people believe that a jackal's horn can grant wishes and reappear to its owner if it gets lost.
Wait, a jackal doesn't have a horn?
According to them, they do.
Unijackal.
I don't know. That's what I got.
Okay, we need someone to show us a jackal horn.
And something that will relate to our past episode of Filipino folklore. In Filipino culture, the most powerful amulet is what is translated in English to pearl or gem of the banana, because it comes from a mature banana and only comes out during midnight.
Oh, weird.
But before a person can possess the amulet completely, they must first successfully fight a capre. And if you forget what a capre is, go to Minisode 52 to find that out.
Ooh, well done.
And there you have it. Some information about amulets and talismans.
Oh, that was a really good history. I feel like I actually learned a lot about talisman.
Talismans.
I have so many comments I want to say. But, okay, so now we're getting into our stories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I am going to be talking first about Thailand's supernatural talisman dolls. And this actually wasn't even one of my stories, and I stumbled across it. And it's so ridiculous and kind of funny that I ended up having to shift things around. It's a little bit shorter, but my second story is going to be pretty long, because I'm actually going to do a little history during my second story,
okay,
which is going to be kind of nice. So anyway, on to the story of the supernatural Thai talisman dolls. So I could call them Thailisman for short. God. There we go. Bam! All right. A craze for eerily lifelike supernatural dolls has swept Thailand in recent months. It was all started by a woman named Mei Ning, who is a doll seller, and she is also a Hindu ritual expert, although self-professed. So take that for what it's worth. And she's also a local radio DJ. Well, she took advantage of that to get on air and claim that the dolls that she makes have superpowers.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so very self-serving, but oh my God, I mean, good for her. So anyway, I'll get into that in a minute, but the dolls' names are called Luck Thep, which literally translates to child angels, and people believe they are talismans that bring good fortune and protection, and they are pampered by their owners as if they were children. I'm going to get into that also here in a little bit.
Oh, that reminds me of those collectors that collect those lifelike dolls.
And these things are kind of creepy, and we'll post a picture of them. Well, so you might ask then, well, how are these things supernatural? Well, they get blessings from Buddhist monks, of course. After purchasing a doll, the owner brings it to one of the monks, who conducts a prayer and an anointing ceremony known as a pluksek. Such prayers are normally used to bless lucky amulets, which are also popular in Thailand, where ancient beliefs and magic are still prevalent. Now, in the case of the Luk Thep, which is the doll, it is often seen as a way of animating the doll, where a wandering spirit is invited to inhabit it and give it a soul. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a few different theories on where the soul comes from. There is one sad theory that the soul was a fetus which had passed away before being born, and some believes that the doll carries the spirit of the dead unborn child. But no matter what you believe or what the sad backstory is that brought everybody down, but now it's time to bring it all up a little bit, this shit has taken off. Oh my God. So the price of one of these dolls can range from about $50, which I think, you know, in Thailand is a lot of money, but they can also cost tens of thousands of baht, which is their money, which is hundreds or thousands of dollars here.
What?
And remember how I mentioned that they pamper these dolls like their own children? Y'all, I mean it. So a couple things. First, Thai Airlines made news when it said passengers could purchase tickets for the dolls who would get their own seats. Additionally, they're offered onboard meals, and the flight attendants are actually trained to treat them like any other child passenger. So can you imagine being like a grown-ass flight attendant and like you go to this new training seminar and it's basically like, now here's how to treat these dolls that are going to be sitting in the seats, and you have to treat them like this grown-up person's child. To me, I think that is so crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures of them and they don't look, I mean, you can tell they're a doll.
Yeah.
Unlike the ones that I'm talking about, they're called reborns. Mm.
Ones that are super realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah.
These are dolls, but it's just the fact that they get that kind of treatment. Like, I mean, just being on a plane and they get their own seat, they get their own treatment. They also get to eat in fancy restaurants. At least one eatery in Bangkok, which is called Netta Grill, said that it's offering meals for Luck Thebs at child rates, adding that the restaurant is open to all worshippers and people who bring in their dolls.
That's so bizarre.
They also get love and affection and sometimes bling. Several owners told BBC Thai that the doll was so important a talisman, they treated them like their own children.
Yeah.
Doting owners have been known to splash out on expensive accessories and jewelry for their dolls for extra protection. So my kind of final thought on this is, unless someone tells me otherwise, I'm going to firmly believe that my Cabbage Patch doll Perry was one of these Luck Thebs, because there is definitely a soul behind those creepy ass eyes. And those dolls were everything. But yeah, I was reading that.
Perry.
That
was the name mine. That was the name of my adopted pound puppy.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Huh. I learned to make out on a pound puppy.
On a pound puppy.
Oh, God. Am I telling this story? Oh, no. Pound puppies had those tongues that stuck out.
Mine didn't.
Well, mine did. And that was the only thing I had that had a tongue. And so whenever I learned about making out, that's what I would practice on because I had a tongue. Okay. Next. Your story.
So for my first story, I guess, I'm going to talk to you about something that can easily be found in your pantry or maybe at your dinner table, which you can guess is
Thai food. Delicious Thai food.
Salt.
Oh,
simple yet very effective.
Semen? No, oh wait.
I'm not going to go into where salt comes from, its composition, all the scientific stuff, because that's not the fun stuff. Instead, I'm going to tell you about its uses and as it relates to rituals, magic, and spirituality. Salt is found in many religions and religious texts across the world. In Christianity, salt is seen quite often throughout the Bible, such as in the Old Testament when Lot's wife is turned into a pillar of salt.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
In what I read, there are over 30 references to salt in the Bible.
I had no idea.
Yeah. In Christianity, salt has been interpreted as a symbol for incorruptibility, eternity, divine wisdom, and a symbol of Jesus's permanent sanctity. And because of its symbolism, it has been used for purification and protection during christenings and baptisms, and has been used to consecrate holy ground along with holy water. In some Eastern religions, salt is used as a purifier as well as to defend against evil. This one's weird. In parts of Sweden, if a girl was unmarried, her family would make what they called a dream porridge, which was a porridge that would be made in silence with tons of salt in it.
Oh, gross.
And you see, the hope was that the unmarried girl would eat the porridge and go to sleep without drinking anything, which would in turn cause her future husband to come to her in her dreams to whet her appetite or her thirst.
Oh, God, but say you'd be so thirsty.
Speaking of this, of the thirsty, yeah.
Speaking of wetting someone's
like
thirst.
Literally thirsty for a husband. So
wow.
In parts of German, Normandy, and Scotland, apparently they ward off witches by using salt in or around a butter churn, because if they don't, the witches will sour the butter or harm the cow that the butter is going to be produced from their milk, you know.
Wow.
In Bavaria and the Ukraine, salt has been known to be used to somehow find out if a child is bewitched. In ancient Egypt, salt was used in a ritual performed before going on a journey in which it would be burned over hot coals. The ritual was said to ward off evil spirits for travelers. I had never heard of this, but salt is sometimes thrown at weddings, and this is in order to for a happy marriage and to ward off any bad or evil that may come to the couple.
So I wonder, like, if it's used
as long as you don't throw it in their eyes.
Yeah, I was imagining like you're getting pelted with a salt gun. Yeah. If it's like because it's so durable that people needed something, and so like, well, it's edible and super durable, so it just feels magical.
I don't know.
Huh.
Considering the belief in the protection that salt could provide, at one time it was used for defense against witches, witchcraft, demons, sprites, and the evil eye. To ward off evil eye, a person would merely have to carry a concealed packet of salt. One common belief in regards to witches is that the animals they bewitched could not eat anything salted. And to ward off these pesky witches, someone could put salt outside the front door and put a broom next to it. This would in turn make any witches passing by have to stop and count the salt grains as well as the broom bristles.
Oh my, there are several things we've talked about that are like about confusing creatures with counting.
Yeah.
Math is used as the true weapon, people.
Yeah, and now you know why math is evil.
Well, no, that's the good thing.
So they would, before they can cause any harm, they would have to count.
Yeah, they have to do math. Wow, yeah. Math is the protection.
When someone was accused of being a witch, they sometimes were force-fed very salty foods without being provided water. Also, demonologists advise the people making the accusations on the witches to protect themselves with an amulet of salt and other herbs pressed into blessed wax that was blessed on Palm Sunday.
Wait, so how do you know if they're a witch? If they eat the salt?
Accusations again. This is,
like what? Like do they?
Oh, I don't
die?
Know.
What? You told us half the story. Well, it's a cliffhanger.
Go look up Salem witch trials.
Now we have to go see about that.
According to Ozark folklore, women who complained of food being too salty were thought to be witches. And in order to determine if someone is a witch, someone would sprinkle salt on a chair. If the person was a witch, the salt would then melt, causing them to stick to the chair.
What the fuck?
And call back to our last episode. In Shintoism, salt is also used as a purification tool. For example, before a sumo wrestling match begins, salt is thrown into the center of the ring to ward off bad spirits. And we all have heard about throwing salt over the left shoulder for good luck. Uh-huh. Do you know why?
To ward off evil spirits and witches.
But more specifically,
uh-huh.
At one time, salt was highly valuable and very expensive, so spilling it was considered bad luck, and in some cases could make a person more at risk of a diabolical attack. So to protect or repel the bad luck, salt was thrown over the left shoulder, as that was where it was believed that the evil spirits could be found.
Wow, so you're like attacking it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although salt was used to supposedly protect and repel witches, it has also been used in Wiccan or witchcraft in spells and rituals. It is used and essential to some rituals as it is symbolic of the earth element and can also purify and define magical boundaries. You can find some of those uses in rituals in our ritual game episode. We talked about salt a lot.
Yeah.
Using salt for protection can be as simple as pouring salt along windowsills or doorways and just saying an intent, where it can be more involved and complicated depending on what you decide to use it for. So if you're looking for a quick, easy way to protect yourself or repel some bad juju, just look no further than your pantry. And there you have it. Just a little bit about salt and its many magical uses.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I never even really thought about it being used in Christianity. So it's actually crazy how widespread it is.
And I mean, obviously, it's an element. So a compound.
Yeah.
But it's been around since the beginning of time. So, you know.
I wonder why then, because it's something that you just dig out of the ground. And I thought it was so common that I'm surprised it was that expensive. I guess that's what I'll say.
I was reading on it is especially during like old Rome and stuff, they would trade salt. They even in Roman times, they would even trade slaves for salt. Like it was very expensive.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Well, pepper used to be the same way too.
Oh, did it really?
Pepper was very expensive.
Huh. Probably Thai tea also.
Hi, I'm Molly.
And I'm Abigail.
We're sisters.
And we believe in ghosts.
Welcome to Supernatural Sisters, a podcast all about ghostly encounters, bone-chilling monsters, and basically anything that goes bump in the night. Each week, we talk about a haunted place, a legendary monster, or a story that sends shivers down our spines. And maybe we'll talk about the pottery scene from Ghost.
He's not a ghost in that scene. There are other parts of that movie where he's a ghost.
Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
And remember, we believe you.
All right, so for my next story, we're going to class it up a little bit.
Oh, my second one's
up the joint.
My second one's just as classy.
I'm going to get into that just in a second. So
I guess I probably influenced you.
You did. I was like, you can't be the only one talking about pee-pees. So I'm going to be talking about something called apotropaic. Dang, that's amazing. Apotropaic magic. So this is from the Greek to ward off to turn, mm-hmm. you know, so it's a type of magic intended to turn away harm or evil influences, as in deflecting misfortune or averting the evil eye.
Yeah. In our Southwest Superstition episode, yep. I talked about what I know about the evil
yeah,
eye.
Yeah, Malojo.
Malojo, yeah.
Hey, I did it. Apatrica pay. Oh, shit. Then I fuck up the next word. Observances may also be practiced out of vague superstition or out of tradition, as in good luck charms, you know, like some kind of lucky rabbit's foot or amulets or gestures such as crossed fingers or knocking on wood.
Mm-hmm.
So it was often practiced by people, though, hoping to ward off witches, devils, demons, and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
So what it really sounds like, the reason I bring this up, is that it kind of encompasses all of this, because it sounds like amulets and talismans are really just a channeled form of apotropaic magic. And
yeah, it's like one of those categories that it all encompasses, yes. like all of it.
And it could be so many episodes because there's so much. But I am going to be talking about one fun type of apotropaic magic, which
okay.
is apotropaic hoo-hoo dillies and cha-chas.
Or, is that what you called it?
Or apotropaic vaginas and penises.
Okay.
So, Chris, okay, y'all, real talk. Chris messaged me his topics when I was doing my research so I wouldn't duplicate what he was doing. And he mentioned something phallic that he's going to be talking about that I don't know. And I was so jealous that I was like, well, I want to talk about hoo-hoo dillies and cha-chas too. So I went and found this. All right. So the term apotropaic genitals refers to instances in which exhibitions or representations of vaginas or penises are deployed to fend off evil.
Mm-hmm.
And by deployed, I mean
exposed.
Literally deployed.
Exposed.
So let's learn more. But first, I do want to say kind of a disclaimer on like genitals versus gender. Because I know like being
disclaimer,
an LGBT.
Don't let your kids listen to this episode.
Yeah, this episode. But I know like being an LGBT podcast, we want to be sensitive, you know, to the topics, you know. And so sometimes I get really silly. And so I don't want to do anything that might be offensive. So I want to, you know, try to make sure that nothing I say is confusing, like,
or misgendered
parts
or anything like
with
that.
Gender orientation or identification or anything. So, but these are like, you know, this information's copied from articles. So if I miss anything, my apologies. So first, vaginas. And y'all, vaginas are more powerful than penises. Let's talk about that.
Duh.
So many cultures around the world have used genitals, representations of genitals, to ward off to fend evil or inclement weather or in architecture to keep evil away or in wars as a defensive strategy. So in a nutshell, a vagina can do anything and I love it. Linked in many cultures to childbirth and creation. And I had to do a little stop there because it actually said in cultures, vaginas are linked to childbirth. And I'm like,
well,
shocking. I never would have known that if it weren't for this article. But it did say that vaginas are potent apotropaic magic. In ancient Greece, a person exposing their vagina was believed to, one, drive away devils, evil spirits, and ill-willed deities. Number two...
And gay men.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Give me, ready? Scare off attacking troops. And it said that both Pliny and Plutarch described instances of soldierly flight in the face of exposed vaginas. So it's basically a person goes out and like, woo, look at my vagina, and the troops all run away. And that's where I was like, what if they were all gay? And I don't want to like say anything like scary about vaginas. I like me personally, like I don't, you know, understand. Like I don't have a lot of experience with them. But there is that stereotype about gay men. Number three, they can keep dangerous animals at bay. And number four, vaginas can calm the elements, including whirlwinds and lightning. The folklore of Catalonia includes references to the way in which vaginas can calm the sea. Fishermen's wives made a practice of exposing themselves to the waves before each fishing trip. So could you imagine this person going out and being like, calm down, waves, look at my vagina.
All the women like on the seashore, you know, with their dresses lifted over their heads.
Yeah, what if it was like a giant trip with like hundreds of fishermen going out and you just see this row of people all like, look at my cha-cha. Italians and people from India also believed in these same powers. And Russian folklore includes stories about how people exposing their genitalia scared away bears. I'm like, what? Yeah. So
so it's not right to just stay still. You got to show them your genitals as
yes,
well.
Exactly. Exactly. So gay bears. Oh.
Oh. Literally.
Huh. I don't know if that means something. So vaginas also adorn or align structures of buildings as a way of warding off evil, which you talked a little bit about mm-hmm. stuff like on these in architecture.
Yeah.
And the Micronesian island of Palau, if I fuck that up, the village meeting houses display wooden sculptures of nude people exposing their genitals, like mm-hmm. their vaginas. The construction of those figures is accomplished by specialists who are assigned the ritual task of producing the figures in accordance with rules that guarantee the efficacy of their powers.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So you have a vaginal architecture?
Correct. Because the arch-like shape of vaginas in the canal made them a symbol of welcome and fecundity while they performed their action. So
fecundity.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is. But so this expert would know the correct angle and I guess dimension to sculpt these vaginas so that they were maximum potent. So can you imagine like that being your job, like your specialty? Is like I'm a architectural vagina specialist, and it's like, oh, we need you.
Yeah.
Right? In Ireland and England and Switzerland, church builders placed stone statues of squatting people, like with vaginas, to protect like the church. That's so I'm imagining crazy. Like now there's these churches, right? So possibly left over from practices of goddess worship, these statues often depicted the people with their legs apart, holding their vulvas open with their hands. There's so much more, but I'm going to stop vaginas with that image.
Oh, my
and
God.
Talk a little bit about peepees.
Just so you know, fecundity is uh-huh. the ability to produce an abundance of offspring or new growth.
Oh, mm-hmm. interesting. Got some new growth going on right now, talking about some pains. So symbols and figures of peepees also serve apotropaic functions, warding off evil and fending off aggression. In ancient Greece, phalli were carved above doorways to protect homes, and phallic sculptures appeared throughout Greece. Throughout the Mediterranean region, both Greeks and Romans used phallic figures to protect valuable resources mm-hmm. such as grain cisterns. And that's where I'm like, wait, that's kind of weird. But they said that it represents the idea of strength and manliness. Ugh, because, you know, you got to have a penis to be a man.
Fuck the patriarchy.
Right, exactly. But that's what they believed. Now, this one's really fun. And so ancient Japan looked to a group of gods called the, I'm not going to pronounce this, to protect believers against beings from the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
The preventative gods were presented as giant phalli that were erected along highways, at the ends of bridges, and at crossroads to impede the passage of evil beings. The phalli became the protectors of travelers who would pray to them for safe passage and offer them rice and hemp. And, you know, let's face it, I've been known to pray to a peepee or two myself, so that's okay. But this is what I wrote. Imagine right here a Puritan or something from the 1600s mm-hmm. visiting Japan, and they stumble across these people crowded around a big penis, and they're praying to it. Well, you know, can you imagine like what they would think?
Well, they still have that penis festival in Japan.
Oh, that's right, they do.
Every year, yeah.
And I guess that maybe spawns it. But the really fun thing about this is that I typed that little Cody comment about, you know, the Puritan mm-hmm. before I read the next sentence in this article. And the very next sentence said, recently, many of the phalli were taken down to avoid offending Western travelers.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, my God, I've predicted the future. Now, this is really interesting. Perhaps the most frequently used contemporary apotropaic phallic symbol is giving the finger. Mm. Although used as a signal of anger, disdain, and evil disgust, the finger and its many variations are also apotropaic, warding off threats, responding to aggression, and serving as a warning. So actually giving the finger is actually a phallic symbol. And you can actually use, I was going to say to ward off things, because I guess you flip someone off and maybe they'll go away. So I guess in that case, it kind of works.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? The final thing that I had is that, you know, whenever you throw the horns, you know, like
yep,
your
the
finger
horns.
And the pinky, that's also an extension of that same symbol, though in a less directly evident manner.
I have another symbol that's going to come up. In,
is
these
it?
These are very closely related.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, the sign of this horn also refers simultaneously to the prowess of a bull, but also to signify that a man has been cuckolded.
Oh,
that
wow.
That his wife has had sexual relations with another man. And doing the horn signs is actually supposed to ward off cuckolders.
Okay.
So when you see all those guys at heavy metal concerts doing that, all they're doing is being insecure about their wives, like
oh
sleeping
gosh.
Around, and they're just throwing the anti-cuckolding signs.
Oh my God, that is so interesting.
Yeah, and that is pee-pees and cha-chas.
So that's a nice segue into my
story. What are you going to be talking about?
Well, my second story, I'm talking about Fascinum, or magic penis amulets. So in ancient Roman mythology and magic, there was the god Fascinus, who was a representation of the divine phallus, or penis. The word fascinate actually derives from the god and from the word fascinum. Mm-hmm. Fascinus was looked to as a protector from sorcery, witchcraft, envy, and the evil eye.
Ah.
The god is depicted as a winged phallus, so penis with wings.
It's a flying TT.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fascinus can either refer to the god itself.
Fascinus gives you wings. Okay, go. Sorry.
Either refer to the god himself or to effigies, amulets, spells, and so on that were used to protect the person who possessed such an item.
Cool.
It was specifically thought very useful in protection against the evil eye. In Roman mythology, it is believed that the phallus embodied a masculine generative power and was considered sacred. For example, if a general won a war or did some other kind of triumphant activity, the Vestal virgins would hang a sculpted penis underneath their chariot for protection. Annually, an image or images of the phallus could be seen being carried at a procession during the festival of Father Liber in order to protect the fields. Boys and girls in ancient Rome would often wear amulets called bulae, which would indicate their social status. In order to increase the power of such amulets, they would either have a penis on them or be shaped like penises, because it was thought that the fertile power of the divine penis would keep them safe.
The divine penis.
Divine phallic symbols were found a lot throughout Roman culture in jewelry, carvings, lamps, and even wind chimes.
Oh, hey, that's so fun.
Yeah. Not only could they protect from evil eye, but they were also thought to ward off evil in general. For children and generals. I don't know why specifically those
children two. And generals. Yeah, that's weird.
So why was the penis so protective? Apparently, it was thought that the phallic model was symbolic to the virility and regenerative powers of erect penises.
Okay.
Although it is said that the reactions that are created by its obscene nature is actually the power that diverts the evil eye.
Really?
So according to the Greek philosopher Plutarch, he says, quote, the strange look of amulets attracts the gaze, so the eye exerts less pressure upon its victim.
Wait, attracts the gaze?
Yeah.
G-A-Y-S?
G-A-Z-E. Dork.
I literally was like, wow, he was like so ahead of his time, because it does attract the gaze.
Gaze of the eye. G-A-Z-E.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I'm with you.
Oh my God. Oh, so.
I mean, both. We'll just say both.
Yeah. Although this is a very real protection, not many images have been found with people wearing phallic charms. But how the phallus protected against evil eye is found in Roman art that is represented by the penis ejaculating towards a disembodied eye. So you'll see that in a lot of art.
Is that why they call it getting Greeked?
I've never heard that.
Like when you shoot in your eye, it's called being Greeked.
Nope.
Interesting.
About Roman.
Oh, well, that's like the same thing.
No, it's not. So another way phalluses may have worked in warding off evil is through laughter.
Oh.
It is believed that penises seen in Roman art could possibly been made in order to produce laughter or to amuse. You see, it was believed that laughing itself was a sort of charm and was thought to get rid of evil eye and keep its powers away. Perhaps this is where we get laughter is the best medicine.
That's so awesome.
Because it was thought that laughter was effective against anger, envy, and depression. So if you are curious and you seek out some of these amulets, you may find different varieties, such as a double-headed penis or something a little more subtle called monofico. Monofico, also called fig hen, can be recreated by slipping the thumb between the index and middle finger. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it was called fig hand, as it was an obscene gesture that was representative of the phallus being inserted into the woman's metaphorical fig.
Wow. So yep. That's our new symbol. Okay.
The monofico was a symbol of good luck and was seen worn more commonly by soldiers, and creating an amulet or talisman with both genital representations would make it even more powerful for fending off evil.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from laughter and other diversionary tactics, perhaps Romans utilized phallus for the simple fact that they are pokey and could poke out eyeballs in some sense. That was my thought.
They're very pokey.
Yeah.
What a compliment. You're so pokey.
You see, in Italian folklore, there is a charm called a corno, which is not exactly a phallus, but close enough. It's a horn.
Okay. From a jackal?
No, it just looked like a twisted horn. Yeah. Uh-huh. You see, this horn works in the same principle in that it is a good luck charm that wards against evil eye. Mm-hmm. That being said, of all the things that phallus amulets can be made of, red coral is said to be the most powerful. I had always heard coral protects against evil eye, and now I know why, at least according to this. According to mythology, coral was created when Perseus beheaded the Gorgon Medusa, who was known to turn people into stone with her gaze, which was said to kind of be a representation of the evil eye.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, when Perseus beheaded Medusa, he put her head on a bed of seaweed. Blood then dripped from her detached head, which petrified and turned the plants red. The nymphs took the seaweed and threw it in the ocean, thus creating coral.
Oh, that's so cool.
Coral has since been associated with the downfall of Medusa and still to this day is worn for power and protection. And there you have it, kids. The Roman tradition of fascinum or magical penis amulets.
Wow, that was amazing. Learned so
fascinating.
Much. Fascinating. That was amazing. All right. So believer, skeptic?
Sure.
Okay. So I'm not going to go so much into the magic vaginas and peepees. Because we've talked a lot about how
because mine is pretty damn magical.
Oh, it...
I almost made you choke.
Prove it. Because we've like this is
podcasts are a visual medium, are not a visual.
Yeah, I was like, wait. I'll just describe it. So,
anyways,
so I'm not going to talk so much about the pee pee hoo hoos, cha chas, because it's a lot of this is about people trying to explain things they don't understand. This magic, you know, and trying to ward off things like things that they can't explain, right?
If you
we've
say
talked
so.
About that a lot. So
if you say so.
No, that's my little claim. But I am going to be talking about the dolls a little bit because it's really interesting because, you know, they've sold so many. Some people really believe in them and believe that they work and that they have worked, bringing mm-hmm. protection and fortune and whatever. So if they're not working, why are they so popular? Like, how do you explain their popularity if they aren't actually magical? Well, I actually found a few theories. One, some believe that the Luck Thep, their name, the mm-hmm. fad is tied to Thailand's low fertility rate, as middle-aged Thai women are most often the one toting these sacred dolls about.
So they probably like either are infertile or yep. miscarry, so they use this as a kind of
coping, or they use it, yeah, to replace the absence of a child.
Or, I mean, as a good luck charm.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's
so it brings infertility.
Yeah, and that's what they're hoping for. And in the meantime, it gives them something to dote over because they don't have a child of their own.
Yeah.
Number two, a common belief is that it was born due to the fact that there was a challenging economic climate in Thailand in 2016.
Okay.
During that time, Thailand's citizens needed something to cling on to, literally, like any kind of hope. They were so desperate for something
Sorry,
that could bring
I
them
thought we're
luck
still talking
fortune,
about penises.
that they could cling on to
yeah.
and lick, that they even got sucked into these dolls. Oh my God. Number three, and this one's actually really, really interesting. The police have expressed concern that doll sellers have been evading import taxes and that the dolls are used to smuggle drugs.
Okay.
Especially if they're
very likely. Yeah.
Earlier this week, and whenever this article was released, police in Chiang Mai intercepted a doll loaded with 200 tablets of the popular recreational
fentanyl?
Drug Yaba.
Oh, okay.
So
I was like fentanyl?
Fentanyl, or, you know, yeah, I don't know what Yaba is. But those are some reasons why the dolls are super popular that are not paranormal reasons.
Okay.
Here you go.
Well, that was short and sweet.
Yeah.
So, evil repellents, good luck charms, amulets, talismans, so on. I believe in the power of them all, but I wanted to specifically dig into salt a little mm-hmm. bit more. You see, salt is seemingly simple and basic, but it holds a lot of power. In the human body alone, salt is needed to transmit nerve impulses, contract and relax muscle fibers, maintain proper fluid balance, and regulates the electrical charges moving in and out of cells.
Mm.
Oh, you also have home remedies such as salt water rinses for mouth issues or infection. Or as I stated, with cells, we drink things like Gatorade, a type of electrolyte, which is in a sense will create an electrical charge so that your cells can function properly. From a spiritual or magical standpoint, salt is a neutralizer and can help cleanse, heal, and balance energy as well as repelling the negative stuff. As I said many times before, we are all made and are constantly surrounded by energy. Energy kind of has its own path and its own mind and can go wherever it wants. Salt can help clear up the residue that the energy may leave behind. Aside from that, salt can help attract positive energy and help in making your manifestations become a reality. Salt has been around since the beginning of time, before medical advancements. So as one article puts it, quote, "In the absence of advanced medicine, amulets provided hope and an important way of appealing for aid."
Mm.
The thing is, I could take salt from my pantry and throw it about, but it'll be completely useless if I don't put any thought or energy behind it. Much like candles, crystals, rosaries, they don't really work if you don't put any clout in them, you know?
Sure.
Like the objects I mentioned, salt is merely just another tool to use for spiritual well-being being that can also be used to enhance your belief or rituals. An example of a ritual that can be involving salt is drinking a glass of water with dissolved salt first thing in the morning, which can both cleanse you internally and spiritually. There are many uses of salt in both everyday use and in rituals across cultures, religions, and the world. So don't fall prey to those who think you need all kinds of complicated tools for your practices when you can use something as attainable as salt. As one writer puts it, quote, "The next time you're sitting down to a meal, take a moment to consider the impact that the little container of salt sitting on the table has had on your existence."
Ooh, that was really good. I love the tie into how it actually physically helps you, so you can see why people have put so much weight into it. Very cool.
Yeah. So creep of the week, no listener story this week, which means you guys need to send those in.
Come on, get us some stories, please.
Instead, I found a short story from 2 days ago. An 11-year-old boy was hiking with his family in Negev Desert in southern Israel, where he found an object that turned out to be a ceramic statuette of a woman with a scarf and with her arms crossed under her bare breasts. The boy's mother contacted an archaeologist to determine what the figurine was. It turns out that this figurine was a protection amulet from around 2,500 years ago that was intended to promote fertility or protect children.
Awesome.
You see, back then, bare-breasted women figures were common and commonly found in people's homes as a way to ward off bad luck and protect against evil eye, promising protection, good luck, and prosperity. Experts have said that this statue is only the second of its kind ever found in the country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was a good luck amulet that brought them tons of money then.
In the article I read, they gave him it was almost like a certificate.
Oh, God, what?
Yeah. Just saying, I found
a bare-boobied statue, and all I got was a t-shirt.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow, that's crazy. Wow, that was actually really interesting. This episode
turned out a lot different than I anticipated.
Same, but I think it turned out better than I expected.
Yeah.
Because...
And I think this is the episode with the most throwbacks that I've ever done.
Oh, true. That's true. Yay.
So, thank you again for listening to us. We love that you take the time. So, if you'd like to show your thanks, you can always... tell other people about the show. We would greatly appreciate that. And if you have any stories that you want to share with us, weird, paranormal, or just otherwise, you can send those to bspodphx@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter by searching bspodphx.
Nice. And
is that everything? Yeah, that's everything.
My books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, as always, are available. All three books. And congratulations to the winners of the drawing that we held. You'll be getting your books this week. I'm sending them off. So, yay, be ready. And I think that's everything, right?
I believe so.
So, everyone, have a safe and protected week, however you decide to protect yourself.
Yeah.
We're fine with that.
You can just use some salt.
Use some salt, yeah. Prophylactic yourself. I don't know what that means, y'all. Okay.
Prophylacticize.
Yeah. And bye.
Bye.
See you again next time.